Now back to New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks.
Anita Marks with you. Mike Tannenbaum is calling the Pittsburgh Steelers Raiders game. So we're not going to hear from him until a little bit later on in the show around 10:30. But Matthias Kiwanuka, former Giant great defensive lineman, Super Bowl winner, joins us now on 98.7 ESPN. Good morning, Kiwi.
Good morning. I'm a former Giant great now. I'm getting better as the time goes on, huh?
You are. You certainly are.
That's what I say. That's what I tell my kids. I say the older I get, the better I was. So, you know.
So great to have you on board. 800-919-3776. Let's break down the show for everybody. I do want to start the show looking back before we look forward. I want to get your thoughts on the Giants' loss to that Washington football team. We'll take a look at the NFC East as well, as the Eagles taking on the 49ers and Dallas heading across the country to take on the Chargers. We'll dive into the Jets. Rich Cimini, who we all know does a phenomenal job covering the Jets, is going to join us at 8:30. And then we've got Mike Reese, who covers the Patriots, who's going to join us at the top of the hour at 9 o'clock. Excited to talk to him. We'll have my locks of the week coming your way around 9:45 this morning. And like I said, Mike Tannenbaum will join us in the 10 o'clock hour, and we'll take your calls throughout. So, Kiwi, with that being said, unfortunate loss, 30-29, the Giants to that Washington football team. What are your initial thoughts in regard to recapping the game and what went wrong for the Giants?
I mean, first of all, I mean, was it an unfortunate loss? I mean, when you look back at the way the game was handled and the way the game was played, I feel like, you know, you have to do things to earn the win. I don't think the Giants put themselves in a position to win that game. One of the first things that I look at is just the overall basics. When you're, as a defensive player, when you're walking back into that locker room on, what is it, Friday, they put up 29 points, 391 yards, and they controlled the time of possession, and they did not turn the ball over. So at what point is the defense going to say, okay, you know what, like, this is on us. Like, it's time for us to play. Everybody in that locker room, I feel like it's time now. It's time now to do some real self-reflection. I was really, you know, in the beginning, I was like, all right, it's one game. Like, let's see how it goes. But now you're 0-2 again. It's time for some real, real reflection in that locker room, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
You know, Matthias, it just seems like this is the same storyline each and every week, every year when it comes to the Giants. You know, what is this fifth or sixth straight year that they start the season 0-2? Mm-hmm. And, you know, some really big question marks for me in regard to that offensive line. You know, this is supposed to be Dave Gettleman's specialty, is drafting and signing hog mollies, as he likes to call them. And, you know, there was a lot of shuffling in the 11th hour, the last minute prior to this game starting. And yes, because of injury, but, you know, one would argue is Will Hernandez playing on the wrong side of the line in regard to left guard, right guard? I think he is. Solder, you know, underperforming. I don't even know if Solder should be a starting left tackle, even right tackle in the NFL any longer. So there's a lot of questions on that offensive line. You know, I don't believe that Saquon Barkley is, and he's not 100%. Listen, if it wasn't for that one run that he broke off for 41 yards, his numbers would be very pedestrian, let's be honest. So the rushing attack isn't working. You know, Jason Garrett, with all due respect, I don't think he calls a good game.
Now, I'll say in the beginning of this game, I was very optimistic. I was very, like, intrigued. I mean, we came out, we had some read option, we had some quarterback keeps, we had some long balls going down the field. I felt like the beginning, at least the first half of this game, was called much better than previous games had been. I think the play calling got stagnant and went right back in the box when things came, you know, when everything was on the line. That was a problem. With Saquon, I thought he looked better. I thought he spoke better. And that's something I'm looking for. Like, he was not as explosive. You're right. Yeah, he had that big long run. But it looked as though he was gaining confidence, as we did not see that in the first game. You know, he was gaining confidence in his knee. He's talking a little bit more confidently about it. And there is an opportunity here for him to be healthy. It's a mental game at this point, I believe. I know they wouldn't put him out there on the field if he wasn't physically capable of doing it. So now he's got to wrap his brain around it. And I said it last week. Like, that's one of the hardest parts about coming back from an injury. You know, mm-hmm. we saw Dak Prescott. He came out, and I said it, like, he knew he was ready to go, and he just wanted to come out and show us. Saquon is trying to feel it out week in and week out, and he's at a different position. He's a running back. People are coming at his knees specifically every single play. His knees are being targeted, and it's allowed. You know, as a quarterback, you know, you're not allowed to be hit in certain situations. But as a running back, I mean, they're coming at you. So he's got a lot to overcome mentally. Can he do it? I mean, I believe so. He's starting to sound a little bit more confident when he does his press conferences, but that's going to be the tale of it. It's about his mental right now. I mean, I'm not in his body, and for all I know, it could be, you know, sliding back and getting worse, but it seems like they're putting him out there because they know he's healthy. He's just got to be able to overcome that mental hurdle.
You know, and just going back to the play calling, you know, not as aggressive towards the end of the game, right? Like, run the football up the middle, gain 2 yards, gain 3 yards, kick a field goal. Like, why not go for the jugular there? When you were watching the game, Matthias, were you saying, come on, man, take a shot in for the end zone? Like,
that was very frustrating.
Like, right?
You said, yeah, they came out, and yeah, we had two runs up the middle, and then they hit a crosser, that which would have still brought up fourth down. So it wasn't, There was no intent on going for it. That's what I was saying. It was playing not to lose the game as opposed to playing to win the game. Take a shot. You know, go for it. Let your guys have a chance to be the star. You know, when you're walking up and down the sideline in a tight game like that, you know, like, we're looking for who's going to be that guy. Who's going to be the guy to get us to win? Like, we're all professionals here. Somebody can make a play. Give us an opportunity to go out there and make that play. The opportunity wasn't given to the guys. You know, Galladay's on the sidelines, you know, screaming and complaining. I mean, at some point, when you look at the game as a whole, like, I could understand being frustrated. You know, I could understand, you know, not if you're not being put in position to make a big play, how are you going to make a big play? You know, you can go back and look, and yeah, Slayton had the big drop, but that play calling in the end really frustrated me.
Not only that, but, you know, in looking at the defensive line, okay, now Dexter Lawrence, and looking at that play, and I know this was trending on social media as well after, was, you know, was that call really legit? Because he timed it. One would say, I'm sure Giants fans are saying, we got robbed. He timed it. He didn't, he jumped the minute the ball moved. Did you see that video? Did you go back and spend a lot of time looking at that video to see if Dexter Lawrence, that penalty was legit?
Yeah, it was close. It was really close. And yeah, I guess it could have gone either way. But the bottom line is, it was called. That's it. Those are the facts. It was called, and the game was lost because of it. I mean, there are other things that contributed to it, but it just can't happen. Now, there was another penalty. Lorenzo Carter lined up in the neutral zone also. So, I mean, this the end of this game was just, it was mismanaged on the sidelines and on the field. There just wasn't that attention to detail. And that's been the talk, I know, all ever since the game about, you know, Joe Judge, he came in and he's supposed to be this disciplinarian and you got to run laps as soon as you make a mistake and this and that. For whatever reason, it's not being translated. It's not being communicated out there on the field. And it wasn't just that one penalty at the end of the game. There were multiple penalties throughout the course of the game that took us out of position to score or put them in position to score. And that's just not acceptable. I mean, you can't win a game when you're beating yourself. That's one of the things Coughlin used to say. First, get out of your own way. First, learn how to play the game, you know, without hurting yourself before you start looking for these big opportunities and blaming other people.
Let's end this discussion in regard to the Giants' loss on this, and that is, I think the silver lining here, Kiwi, is the way that Daniel Jones performed, right? Like, 4 sacks, by the way, in the first quarter, 11-yard depth of target, under duress, by the way, 88% completion percentage, under duress, and he had 4 drops. And he had a second rushing touchdown that was called back because of a holding play. Like, the silver lining to me is, and I know there's so much talk and so much emphasis in regard to, like, this season for Daniel Jones, he has to prove that he's the quarterback of the future for the Giants. Like, even though the Giants lost, man, I was really, really impressed with Daniel Jones's performance, weren't you?
Definitely. That's what I was trying to say, you know, coming into this thing, is what are we critiquing of Daniel Jones? We saw on Thursday. If you give him time, he can. He has his poise. He has his feet underneath him. He's looking down the field, and he can complete that deep ball. If you want to back off the ball and you're not going to pay attention to him, he could burn you off the edge. He can run the ball up the middle. He's not afraid of contact. I mean, the kid has skills. I mean, if you let him go, I feel like he's going to go somewhere else and he's going to flourish. So I was definitely impressed with the way that he played. I mean, it wasn't enough, but, you know, unfortunately, a lot of that lies on the defense. One thing I will say is that, you know, in the beginning of the game, I was impressed. You know, last week, Ojulari, young guy, he was responsible for that long run that went screaming down the sideline. He was the one that got mollywopped out of his gap, and the ball went screaming down his hole. He came out on fire. Man, he had the only sack in the game, and he came out looking to kill somebody. And that was what part of me, like, got me excited when I first started watching the game. I said, oh, wow, like, they're taking corrections. That kid was obviously told something about the way that he played last week, and now he came out here ready to play. That's what I want to see. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see guys who take it personally. If you have a bad game, if you miss a play, or if you do something, you know, like, come back, do get a pick in the fourth quarter, you know, do something big to help the team. Let the stuff from behind you go and come back out and play, you know, the way that you're supposed to play. So I feel like they faded down the stretch. I know we're going to end it here pretty soon. Like, I feel like they faded down the stretch, but they came out strong. Offensive play call in the beginning was creative. It was different. It gave us an opportunity to put some points up on the board. Defense just has to understand, you know, if they're going to put up 29 points, control the time of possession, we have to find a way to win that game.
I know it's a different day, right, in the NFL when you're talking about 17 games as opposed to 16. So I feel it's important that I share these percentages with our listeners. So with the Giants starting 0-2 this season, with the 17-game schedule now, they have an 11.6 chance of making the playoffs. They've got a 5.8% chance of winning the division, and they have a 1.2% chance of winning the Super Bowl. That's where it stands right now. They take on Atlanta next week, Kiwi. I do have them winning that game, okay? So let's just say, hypothetically speaking, they do, and they're 1-2. Making the playoffs then elevates to 24.8%. Winning the division elevates to 12.7%, but winning the Super Bowl continues to stay at 1.2%, just FYI. Looking at the division itself, I'm really excited about the 49ers-Eagles game today. Want to get your thoughts on this, man. Eagles, their defensive... When the Eagles' defense and offensive lines are healthy, they are the best, they're one of the best in the business. You can argue top five, and they're healthy right now. And I love the way that this offense now is being designed to accentuate Jalen Hurts' skill set. So I like the Eagles today. Eagles are getting three and a half in some places. Don't be surprised if the Eagles upset the 49ers today. That's all I've got to say. Dallas going to L.A. to take on the Chargers. A lot of injuries on their defensive line. Lawrence, we know, is out because of the Achilles. Randy Gregory is out as well. They just lost another safety, Wilson. So they've got three starters on defense that are out, going up against Justin Herbert, who... carved up that Washington defense in week one. Your thoughts on Dallas and the Eagles. What do you think? They win? You think they lose? What do you think happens with those two teams today?
I like the Eagles too. I've been listening to Coach Sirianni, and he sounds like a guy that's getting people fired up. He's getting people ready to play. I mean, he's got the confidence, and he's putting it into Hurts, and Hurts has the team's confidence. I mean, he was what, 27, 35, 264 yards. Like, that's solid. But you put that with a great defensive line play, and they have some really good things going on there. He's talking about, you know, creating matchups. Like, that was one thing that stood out to me when I was listening to him talk, was that, you know, he's talking about putting the players in position. That was something that was always preached when I was in the building. You know, you have a game plan, right? But who is your player? Like, who is your guy, either on offense or defense? Who's the guy that you want to highlight? You want to shine? Let's get that guy in position. So I'm expecting him, you know, to have something really good for Devontae Smith, especially with Jason Barrett being out. You know, and so we'll see some points on the board for the Eagles game. As it pertains to Dallas, you know, I think, you know, having that extra time to rest is important. I can't understate how important it is. Like, when you're in the NFL and you get a little bit of extra time, I think, you know, Ezekiel Elliott, there's no way he's going to have another 33-yard performance. He's going to come out. He's going to run the ball. Yeah, they lost to Marcus Lawrence, and they have suspension on the offensive line. But I think when it comes down to it, they're going to pull that one out. Dak Prescott looked great. You know, he looked completely healthy. He looked unfazed. And if he wasn't playing against one of the, if not arguably the greatest quarterback to ever play the game, I think, you know, they would be 1-0 right now.
Now back to New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks.
Matthias Kiwanuka, Anita Marks, New York Game Day. Let's dive into it. Rich Samini is going to be joining us in about 10 minutes. Jets, Patriots, and this is, I'm stealing this from Rich Samini's column, the Zach Mack era begins in New York today. And tale of two stories, really. Let's be honest here. You know, Mac Jones falling to the Patriots at 15 and really falling right into a really great situation for himself. You know, you can argue top five, top 10 offensive line, great coordinator in Daniels, great team, ready to win now, went out in free agency, spent a lot of money in free agency, drafted well. He's got weapons to work with. Meanwhile, on the opposite side of the ball for Zach Wilson, subpar offensive line, now no Becton, so it gets worse. A very young secondary, rookie corners, rookie linebackers, not a lot of great talent, skill position players to work with. A lot of question marks in regards to that backfield. Jamison Crowder is expected to be active today. Hopefully he can help. Obviously, there's a nice connection between Zach and Corey Davis, but nonetheless, I think it's going to be a long day for Zach Wilson, and I think it's going to be a prosperous day for Mac Jones. Your thoughts, Kiwi?
Yeah, I mean, I think not everybody can pull, you know, a Manning and get to the team that they want to right after the draft, but I think as far as a top quarterback pick, falling a little bit and ending up in a Bill Belichick, you know, team, it's got to be beneficial. I just don't see any way that the Jets are going to be able to pull this one out. You know, I know, you know, what Belichick's record is against rookie quarterbacks and that whole nine. You know, we got to give some credit to Matt Patricia. I feel like he's going to dial some things up that just have not been seen and going to confuse him. And all Mac Jones is going to have to do is really control the game and not let it get out of hand.
Yeah, you talk about Bill Belichick's record against rookie quarterbacks. 31 games, rookie quarterbacks only average 54% completion percentage, 25 touchdowns, 43 interceptions. The prop bet out there for Zach Jones Zach Wilson to throw an interception today is like -180, which means you have to lay $180 down to win $100 that Zach is going to throw an interception. Chances are he is, but that's a lot of coin to lay down. The odds are not favorable, but I'm sure a lot of people are going to do that. Let's go to our phone lines, Kiwi. We've got Ira calling in from Staten Island. Ira, welcome in. I know you're headed to the game. Are you there already?
No, I just got done my workout. We're packing up, getting ready to leave. Excited. I can't believe after 2 years getting back to a regular season game. And, you know, you brought it up when I spoke to you perfectly yesterday. I give Mac Jones the head of the curve right now because you're right. He's a much far finished product at this point. But you know what? Today, and listen, you know, all points, you know, everything points to, you know, the Pats winning. I hope it's a competitive game. I mean, Belichick, you know, his staff, good defense. But you know what? The one determining factor that maybe could sway it towards the Jets is that you still, at the end of the day, have two rookie quarterbacks. And it's both their second game. It's a Jets home opener. You never know. I mean, maybe Jones has an off day. Maybe, you know, he gets rattled. Maybe he fumbles a couple of times. Maybe he throws a pick. I understand Wilson could do the same thing. But to me, that's the equalizer in today's game. And if the Jets have any chance, it's because you do have two rookie quarterbacks. But I do believe, win or lose, the Jets will run the ball better because I think Font, as much as, you know, Becton is heralded to be, you know, a stud left tackle, I think in this scheme, I think Font is more mobile, and I think they will run the ball, win or lose, more effectively this week than they did last week.
Ira, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Kiwi, thoughts on what Ira had to say?
The only problem I have with that is, yeah, there's two rookie quarterbacks, but, you know, this Patriots defense is tied for fifth, you know, and meanwhile the Jets offense is ranked 29th. I just don't see it happening with a run game. I mean, they have that running back by committee, but nobody had more than 30 yards. I just don't see it being I see it being one-sided, mainly because the Patriots defense is going to come out and they're going to confuse, you know, you know, the quarterback, and that's kind of how it's going to go.
Now back to New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks.
And we've got Mike Reese, who joins us, does an excellent job covering the Patriots from ESPN. All right, Mike, let's look back before we look forward. And let's start with the fact that, let's be honest, the Patriots should have beaten the Miami Dolphins, but didn't because Damian Harris fumbled the football. We know how much Bill Belichick can't stand when his players fumble the ball. How has he and this team responded to, I'm sure it's been a heck of a week at practice with Bill Belichick?
Well, Anita, I would say that as Mac Jones was driving the Patriots down the field in the fourth quarter in the season opener, I was thinking that I was watching what I had seen from Tom Brady all those years. It felt the same from the energy in the stadium to the command that Mac was showing at quarterback. And then that fumble that you mentioned about Damian Harris changed everything. And so that's been a big focus this week for the Patriots is ball security. They know the Jets are coming after them in this game on Sunday. And at any time that a defensive coaching staff sees that another team is able to get the ball away from opposing running backs, well, of course they're going to tell their defenders, go get that ball. And so I was out of practice all week, and you could see the Patriots really ratcheting up their ball security drills. And I think that's a great place to start talking about this Patriots-Jets matchup.
Yeah. I envision what was the movie where the high school football player couldn't stop fumbling the football. So was it Denzel Washington was the head coach? He made him like take it home, sleep with it, eat with it. Do all kinds of, I'm trying to think what movie.
The program.
Yeah, the
right?
program. That okay. was it. That's what okay. I envisioned right. happening with Damian Harris this week.
So Anita, the crazy part about this is that Damian Harris leading into the game last week, he carries a football everywhere he goes. So he was already doing that. And in fact, he was called out by a fellow teammate, Brandon Bolden, for never having seen the program, even though he was carrying the football around. It was almost like foreshadowing what was to come.
That's funny. All right, so let's dive into this game. I'm really excited about it because obviously, there's a little bit more, I don't know if juice is the right word to use, but, Mac Jones, the Jets passed up on him. He fell to the Patriots. And now, now you've got Zach Wilson, who the Jets did select. And these two guys, how much more, and not to say that every game I'm sure matters a lot to Mac Jones, but, do you feel like there's a little bit more emphasis in this game because he knows the Jets selected Zach Wilson over him?
No, I wouldn't say that, Anita, but I would say this. It's a huge game for the Patriots. I mean, you're staring at 0-2 for the first time since 2001, which is they have the longest streak in the league of not having been 0-2. And you got the Saints coming in week 3, and then Tom Brady and the Buccaneers coming in after that. Like, you got to go win this game. And I know it's cliche to talk about must win, week 2 of the season. But my goodness, Anita, I mean, the Patriots are obviously favored. They should win the game. But after the way we saw it unfold in the season opener, I mean, they're not in position to take the Jets lightly. I would just say that. And so to me, it's more that than anything about, Mac being motivated by the Jets taking Zach. And there's also the idea that this is the first time that the Patriots and Jets will have had two rookie quarterbacks on each side starting in a game, which I think does add a little bit of extra sizzle to the matchup.
Again, Mike Reese joining us here on 98.7 ESPN, who does a phenomenal job covering the Patriots and has for quite a while now. All right, so we know the record with Bill Belichick against rookie quarterbacks. 25-6 in those 31 games, rookie quarterbacks averaged 54% completion, 25 touchdowns, 48 interceptions. We know Becton is not going to be active and attractive on this offensive line. What can you share with us? What's the magic that Bill Belichick creates? What's the potion that he creates against rookie quarterbacks, Mike?
Well, there's a couple different ways to look at it, Anita. I would say if you look at all, you know, the totality of everything you just mentioned, I mean, the ability to show them things they haven't seen before, confuse them, all that stuff. And it's all true. I think I would probably give a counterpoint right now, and I would say, you know, the last time he faced a rookie quarterback, it was Tua Tagovailoa. It was last year, and Tua carved them up. And the last time we just saw the defense this past Sunday, you know, Patriots had a chance to get the ball back after that Damian Harris fumble. The Dolphins are at their own 9-yard line. Patriots have all three timeouts. They're 3:31 on the clock. And the Dolphins got two first downs. So, I mean, I don't know, Anita. You know, like, I don't know if the history even matters. Like, the Patriots just got to go out and prove it and show that they're better than the defense that couldn't get the ball back at the end of the game on Sunday. And to be honest, better than the defense the last time they faced a rookie quarterback in Tua.
It definitely is going to be a good one. Let's talk about the weapons, right, that Mac Jones has become really familiar with and feels comfortable with. I like Nelson Agholor a lot this week. Who do you feel in watching, of course, you know, Mac throughout camp and watching game one, who do you feel that he's connected, that he's bonded with the most with all the weapons that he has at his disposal?
You know what, Anita, I really feel like I could pick any one of the skill position players and feel confident in making a case that he's connected with them. It's actually been the story around the team of how Mac has won over all of his teammates. But let me just drill down a little bit further for you on that. I mean, Nelson Agholor is the number one receiver. He's going to be out in the field in all the personnel groupings, along with Jacoby Myers. So those are the two top receivers. And then Kendrick Bourne is their number three guy. He's the slot guy who will come on in a three-receiver package. But you also have a sort of new thing for the Patriots this year, which is the two tight end package is back with Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. They played it about 50% of the time in the season opener, and ideally the Patriots love to do that because at its best, it just gives them flexibility. They either pound it with two tight ends in tight, or spread it out and use the tight ends in the passing game as traditional pass catchers. I'll just say this. One thing to keep an eye on is that Jonnu Smith is questionable for the game against the Jets, came up with a hip injury and was limited in practice on Thursday and Friday. So that potentially could be a factor in, you know, how much they use it, whether Jonnu is even there. I haven't heard what his sort of likelihood of playing in the game is. They listed him as questionable, but so I think that's sort of a little bit of a snapshot of what Mac is looking at weapons-wise.
Before I let you go, let's go to the opposite side of the ball. And like I said, no Mekhi Becton on the offensive line. You know, again, I think one of the things that really has been a huge success for the Patriots against rookie quarterbacks is the way they're able to scheme defensively. What do you expect from the front seven? How do you expect them to – I at least expect them to show Zach Wilson – a few things he's never seen before at BYU, let alone his very short stint in the NFL.
Yeah. So Anita, one of the things they've talked about this week is, you know, stop the run, try to take that away from the Jets because play action can be really effective. And they didn't like the way they stopped the run at the end of their season opening loss to the Dolphins. So they're going to start there. And then one, you know, ideally they'd like to get Zach and the Jets offense into obvious passing situations where they can scheme some things up with some of the dynamic athletes, you know, that they have in their front, you know, six, seven, however you want to say it. So that would sort of be the formula, but I would say this, you know, watch the Jets in the second half. And I thought Zach made some plays, got out of the pocket on that first touchdown pass. And I'd say if there's an area of vulnerability with the Patriots defense, it's in the secondary at cornerback. So there's going to be some opportunities for the Jets to make some plays in the passing game if they can protect Zach and if Zach can extend some plays and guys can uncover as the Patriots try to plaster that, you know, play that plaster technique in the secondary.
It's going to be a good one. Mike, thank you again. Always a pleasure when you join us and, you know, wealth of knowledge and insight on a team that you do so well covering. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Anita. Always great to be with you.
Now back to New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks. These are Anita's Locks of the Week. And we're not talking about her long blonde hair.
Ha ha! No, we're not. We're talking about winners. All right, here we go, Kiwi. Number one, I like the Bills -3 at Miami. I think this line is low just because the Bills lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers last week. The Bills 5-0 against Miami in the last five matchups that they've faced them. Keep in mind, Pittsburgh, their defense is amazing. They were able to pressure Josh Allen by just rushing four. And you know this as a defensive lineman, Kiwi. That is magic when you can make that happen. For the Miami Dolphins, they're going to have to blitz, which means they're going to have to send more guys in order to get the pressure on Josh Allen. And so that is right in his wheelhouse. Two of the best quarterbacks against the blitz is Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. We're going to get to him in just a hot second. But also, I love Stephon Diggs in this game. Two games against Miami, Stephon Diggs 8 for 153 yards and a touchdown. His second last year, 7 receptions for 76. So again, I think this line is like, I wouldn't be surprised to kick off this line goes to 3.5. So jump on it right now. But I love this Bills team. Again, I think the line is low because they lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers in week one. And also, oh, by the way, the Miami Dolphins beat the Patriots, but they beat them because Damian Harris fumbled the ball at the last minute. So I really love the Bills this week. What do you think about this game?
I see where you're going with it. I mean, especially since Tua was, what, 16 for 27 with about 200 yards last week. But in my opinion, you know, the former player in me, I'm big on momentum. I'm huge, huge, huge on momentum. The Dolphins went into New England and they beat a strong Patriots team who was arguably coached by the greatest coach to ever coach the game. So I'm going to stick with Miami. I think Brian Flores is going to have these guys fired up. He's going to have some things dialed up, and yeah, they are going to have to blitz. But I think they're going to be able. They got some turnovers last week, and I think they're going to show that again this week.
Wow. So you're on my wow. I've got the Bills as my wait. Here's the thing, Kiwi. I've got the Bills as my Super Bowl pick. And there's no way the Bills start off 0-2. I'm sorry. There is no way.
I'm telling you, momentum is huge. And the way those guys came off the field in Miami, the way that they're playing right now, I honestly believe in them. I believe that that win is going to carry them through this week. And yeah, I think the Bills are going to start off hard too.
So by the way, I got some statistics here in regard to, because a lot of people don't know, you know, now that we've got another game, right? We've got another game on the docket for all the teams, right? A lot of people don't know, what does 0-2 mean? Like, you know, before team starts 0-2, no way they make the playoffs. Okay, well, here are the percentages. You start the season with now the extra game. You start the season 0-2, you have 11.6% chance of making it to the playoffs. You've got a 5.8% chance of winning the division. And you've got a 1.2% of winning the Super Bowl. No way, dude. No way.
I get what you're saying, but I was on one of those 1.2% teams. I was on that team that went 0-2 and came back and won it. And I'm telling you, there's something about being in the locker room with a group of guys, knowing that you only have one shot left in this year with this group of guys, or something's going to change, or something's going to happen. There's going to be some big moves that are going to be made. If you can get it done, you can get it done. That's why they play these games. This year, I mean, there's always going to be a storyline. There's going to be some crazy story that comes out of it. And I believe that, you know, this is going to be one of them.
I love it. All right. But so we're on opposite ends, maybe a bottle of wine. Okay. We'll see. Now, game number two for me is the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, the line out there, you can get it at 3, get it at 3.5. This is what I recommend you do. Get it at 3 and buy the point down, or buy the half a point down, I should say. Kansas City -2.5 against the Ravens. Ravens start the season out. Well, first of all, let's rewind. The Ravens, an infirmary before they even start the season. Dudes dropping like flies and like starters. Starters in the backfield, starters in the their DBs. Then they travel out west to go to Las Vegas to take on the Raiders overtime on Monday Night Football. And Kiwi, you know how horrific a West Coast flight is back home to the East Coast after a butt-whipping like that. And they get back to Baltimore. More injuries. Injuries to the offensive line. More injuries to the DB department. This Ravens team is sitting back going, are you pooping me? Like, can we get a break at any point in time in the in this like decade? Meanwhile, Andy Reid wins 70% of his matchups when he has a rest advantage, and that's exactly what Kansas City has coming in. And then last but not least, Mahomes, I mentioned earlier, listen, don't blitz this dude, because when you do, Ravens, whenever they face Mahomes, he owns them, by the way. They blitz him 45% of his dropbacks. He's got a 76% completion percentage, 6 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. But that's, but in all honesty, like that's all, like, you know, they don't have the horses in their stable, Kiwi, to get after him without blitzing. So it's kind of like pick your poison, right? So anyway, I love Kansas City. Again, I just, you know, it's Lamar Jackson. I'm worried about the backdoor cover. I like Kansas City -2.5. What say you?
I mean, I think it's crazy to go against Mahomes right now. I mean, the off-balance pass across his body all the way across the middle. I mean, 10 out of 12 quarterbacks don't make that play. When it comes to the Ravens, the one thing everybody says is, you know, when you start a season is, when you have a great team, if they can stay healthy, then that. I mean, injuries have ravaged their entire team to a point where it's a little bit ridiculous, and that is a storyline. So I don't even think that the travel week has that much to do with it. I think it's about injuries and being able to stay healthy and be on the field. Kelce and Hill combined for 3 touchdowns last week. I mean, that's the story. You know, you can't go against Kansas City.
Last but not least, there is a plethora. I love using that word. There's a plethora of 2-team 6-point teaser plays that I love this week, and I'm playing all of them. Probably my favorite, I'm going to tee up 2 for you. And again, this is my 3rd play. It's a teaser, 2-team 6-point teaser. Steelers and Raiders under 53 points. Okay. Number one, we know how great the Steelers defense is. Carr's going to be in for a long day. Ben Roethlisberger, if you go and you look at that film, the tape with the Steelers, their defense won week 1 for them. Ben looks off, inaccurate. His depth of target, 6 yards. He's just really, really off. And also, both these teams, very slow pace played teams in the NFL. So I love the under here. I don't think a lot of points are going to be scored in this game. Under 53 points. And I'm going to pair that up with the Bucs -6.5 against the Falcons. We know Brady's going to be good for 3 touchdowns. The Falcons in week 1, 0 plays. Kiwi, 0 plays of 20 yards or more. Okay, they're averaging 6 fewer yards per passing play than the Eagles in week 1. And now you're taking on Tom Brady and the Bucs this week. And Matt Ryan against that Bucs defense, they blitz 53% of the time. Dude did not look good. He was under duress the entire time against the Eagles. It's a bad week 1 and week 2 for Matty Ice and this Falcons team. So I'm going to tease the Bucs down to -6.5. So Bucs -6.5, Steelers, Raiders under 53. That's my 2-team 6-point teaser. Do you like it?
I like it. I think you're on point, especially with the Steelers Raiders there. I think Ben Roethlisberger, he did enough. You know, he moved around in the pocket just enough to get to where he needed to be. But you're right. And then the Raiders coming off of a Monday night game, I just don't see them having, you know, all that in the tank. And, you know, the Bucs, yeah, you're right. Brady's going to put up some numbers, but you know, Atlanta, they're coming off of a really tough one. And Matt Ryan, God bless him, he was beat up. So I think you're right on point with that one.
Isn't it amazing, Kiwi? You know, all those offensive linemen were drafted in the first round, and they're still one of the, you know, bottom feeders when it comes to offensive lines in the NFL. It's really, really unbelievable. All right, so
this has been locks of the week. To show that you can't just put a team together. You know, you can't just put a team together. It's not just names that make a team. We saw it in the Giants game. You know, they had an injury and somehow they come out and bust a big play right after that. It's about how you play together as a group when you're talking about offensive and defensive line.
You're absolutely right. You're spot on. So this has been Locks of the Week, Week 2, my plays. Bills minus 3, Kansas City minus 2.5. I'm buying the half down. And also a two-team six-point teaser with the Steelers, Raiders under 53 and the Bucks at minus 6.5 against the Falcons.
Now back to New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks.
Let's take a look around the NFL and some of the other games out there. One in particular, the Chargers and the Dallas Cowboys. Okay, listen, Herbert put on a clinic against Washington last week. Over 336 yards passing. He was, I want to say, 14 of 18 on third down conversions, and a lot of them were third and long, third and 8, third and 9, third and 10. Really, really, really impressive. Meanwhile, for the Dallas Cowboys, Lawrence is out, Randy Gregory is out, Wilson, their strong safety, is out, not to mention, you know, their secondary porous to begin with. I really like the Chargers this week. How do you see this game playing out?
I think this one goes to Dak Prescott. I mean, he was 42 of 58, 403 yards passing. And Ezekiel Elliott only had 33 yards, and that's the thing I think that they're going to look to correct. They're going to look to correct their running game. If you add his poise in the pocket, his ability to get the ball down the field, and how healthy he looked running with the ball to a run game, I believe that the Cowboys are going to pull it out. You know, they look really strong this year. I get that they do have, you know, a couple of guys out, offensive line and DeMarcus Lawrence, like they've got some things to overcome, but I feel that Dak's got this one in the bag.
Here's another one for you, and that's the Rams at Indianapolis going up against the Colts. Colts getting their offensive lineman back. Nelson, of course, was there. Fisher is allegedly, apparently, reports are he's going to start, which is great for Carson Wentz. Listen, this is the reason why Carson Wentz went to the Colts, right, and why he struggled, at least some of us felt, in Philadelphia because of that offensive line that he played behind. But more importantly, like, I was really excited to see the marriage between Matthew Stafford and Sean McVay. And boy, do they put on a show in week one. I think this Colts defense, they're good, but what the Rams can do offensively, I'm really excited to see what happens this week. Your thoughts on what you saw from the Rams and Matthew Stafford in week one?
Yeah, with Matthew Stafford, it was just he needed a change. He needed an opportunity to be able to go out and show that he could perform, you know, with help, with people surrounding him. So I think Carson Wentz and Matthew Stafford both are in that same boat where they feel like, you know what, this is my opportunity to show that I am a good quarterback. Like, this was not me. This is not how I would have performed if I was given the right circumstances. But I think Matthew Stafford is going to come out with this one.
The Bengals and the Bears. You know, Bear fans are waiting for Andy Dalton to just fail miserably so that Justin Fields could come in and be the starting quarterback for the Bears. I like Cincinnati here. Chicago is favored by 1.5. This line at one point in time was 3.5, by the way. But I liked what I saw from Joe Burrow in week one. I thought that knee would be a bigger issue for him because it hasn't even been 12 months since the knee injury and the surgery. But I really like what I saw from the Bengals. I really like their defense. I think the Bengals have an opportunity to upset the Bears today, but there's a lot of sharp money that are on the Bears who feel that the Bears are really going to roll. In fact, I want to say Dave Rothenberg, who does his Saturday show, his last hour is with R.J. Bell. If I remember correctly, Ty, R.J. Bell said that the Bears are his best bet this week, right? Didn't he say that?
He did. He did say that.
Do you recall why?
He just wasn't sold on that that Rams performance last week. He said he liked Chicago.
So, you know, I want to throw this back your way, Matthias, you know, in regard to Andy Dalton. How difficult do you think it is for Andy Dalton to be back there? He knows the fans want Justin Fields. There's some reports out there. I've spoken to a number of people who cover the Bears that there are guys in that Bears locker room who wants Justin Fields. You know, it's hard enough to win in the NFL in each and every week. And, you know, to not have the support, the 100% support of your fan base and your teammates, that's got to be hard, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could say forget about the fan base. If your teammates are coming out and saying that they'd rather see somebody else in there, that has to be difficult. Now, quarterbacks are built different. quarterbacks, in order to get to that elite level, in order to get to the NFL and play, you have to have more than just tough skin. You have to, you know, almost have impenetrable skin. So I don't see Andy Dalton sitting back and saying, oh, woe is me, my teammates don't like it. I think he might take that as an opportunity to say, all right, you know what, if nobody believes in me, I'm going to come out here and show what I can do. Now, the issue is, we understand Justin Fields is going to at some point be on the field, right? So at what point do you go ahead and make that switch? When there starts to be these grumblings in the building and Nagy this or somebody should go or there should be some changes being made, that becomes a story in and of itself. And that could penetrate into a locker room and create more disturbances than are necessary. So although, you know, I do like the Bears on paper, I agree with you. I think the Bengals might edge this one out just because there are a lot of distractions. And at this point in the season, you know, 1 week, yeah, nothing should be said, nothing should be done. Let's just move on. Let's just go play football. You get into 2 weeks, and now decision makers are starting to look at what changes need to be made. This is the NFL. You know, they don't let things go on week after week after week. Some changes are going to be coming. Players are going to be moved around and going to be shuffled, and people feel that, and that can become an issue in and of itself.
Another game, 1 o'clock kickoff is the Browns at home. They're favored by 13.5, almost 2 touchdowns. You know how hard it is to beat a team by 2 touchdowns. I don't care how god awful they are, and they're going up against the Texans, who, for what you listen, I love Tyrod Taylor. I've met him several times. He's just a good dude. Like, you want to root for him. They have Brandon Cooks back there. Ingram did fairly well in week one. They've got Lindsay back there as well. Listen, there's some weapons on this Texans team. I'm not saying Texans are going to beat the Browns by any stretch of the imagination, but I do believe that they could cover here. You know, I think there's going to be a lot. I like the over in this game. I think a lot of points are going to be put up in this game. No Odell Beckham Jr., by the way.
What is going on with Odell Beckham Jr.?
Well, this is where I want. So, you know, my gut's telling me, Kiwi, I think Odell's going to be traded before the trade deadline. And I think the Browns don't want to play him, don't want him to get re-injured. Mm-hmm. I just have this feeling like that's what's happening, is that the Browns are going to try to trade Odell before the trade deadline, and they don't want to risk injury. Could be totally wrong. I'm not breaking news here. I don't have any inside scoop. I don't know anything, but Odell's out. By the way, sneaky great play here is Donovan Peoples-Jones, wide receiver for the Browns, over 2.5 receptions, over, I think it's like 23.5 or 24.5 receiving yards. Love those overs today. I think it's one of my favorite bets. Sneaky good play this week. But your thoughts on this Texans team, Tyrod Taylor? You know, here's another thing with Tyrod. Finally on a team where, like, he's the guy, right? How important is that for a quarterback to come in and be like, I'm the guy. I don't have to look over my shoulder. I don't have to worry that, oh my gosh, if I throw an interception, the hook is going to come out. Like, this is my team right now. We know Deshaun Watson's never going to put on a Texans uniform ever again. There's nobody, you know, barking up, you know, knocking on the door to start. It's his team. Like, that's got to give him a lot more confidence than he's had in any other team he's played for in a long time.
I think that's important. I think a lot of times, you know, coaches and front office staff in this league, they can get caught up in trying to squeeze the most out of a player. Let's put some pressure on them. Let's squeeze them and see what they're going to do and get the most out of them under pressure. And by do that, by putting somebody behind them who's breathing down their neck, and that can go the opposite way. So you're 100% right. Being in a situation as a player where you can calm down, you know that you're all right. You know what? You're going to make mistakes, but they're going to work with you to correct those mistakes. You are the guy, meaning that they're going to play and create offensive plays that are designed to accentuate your strengths. You know, that goes a long way. You're not playing in somebody else's offense or offense designed for a player who can do things that you cannot do. This is his opportunity. And to see him starting to make the most of it, I think that's another great storyline. You know, those are the kind of things that I enjoy talking about. So I'm looking for him to come out and to play very well and to execute the offense and get the ball down the field again.
Last game I want to tee up for you, and I saved the best for last because I think this is an interesting conversation to have, Matthias, and that is Denver at the Jaguars. Okay, like, I love Denver. We saw what they were able to do against the Giants in week one. I think a lot of people underestimate Teddy Bridgewater, one of the best in regard to completion percentages in the NFL when he starts. Really smart guy. Players love playing for him. Leader in the locker room. All those things. Checks all the boxes. I know Jerry Jeudy. KJ Hamler is going to step in at the slot position. You got Sutton, as well as Tim Patrick. Noah Fant, I think, has a great day against the Jags. I think the Jags get destroyed, especially they're saying Bradley Chubb's going to play. Keep in mind, Bradley Chubb did not play against the Giants. He's expected to play today with Von Miller and in that secondary. They're going to be really good. But the story here is Urban Meyer. And the story coming out of Jacksonville is that Urban Meyer is just rubbing everybody the wrong way. And I know I'm going to date myself here, but I covered the Dolphins when Nick Saban was the head coach down in Miami. And Nick Saban did the same thing. I think it's really hard for these very successful college coaches who coach with this dictatorship type of tyrant philosophy with young, and I'll use the word boys with all due respect, right? 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old boys in college. It's different. They're hanging on every word. They don't want to upset the head coach. They want to be able to play. They want to be. They want to shine on Saturday afternoon or Saturday night in college football, right? Like that. Like, you know, they answer to these coaches. You can't come in and please tell me if I'm wrong. You can't come in to the NFL and treat grown men, 25, 26, 27, 30 years old, who are, oh, by the way, are making more money than you, the way that you treated the young men that you coached in college. It does not work. It does not work. Like, maybe Trevor Lawrence is buying into it because he's a rookie and he just came from Auburn, but it does not work. I'd love to get your take on this. Like, you know, you're on that team. Urban Meyer comes in with that type of Nick Saban coaching philosophy, treating grown men like boys. How, any surprise that there's some dissension in that Jacksonville Jaguars locker room right now?
I mean, you said it. It doesn't work. There's no comparison. When you're in a college locker room, that coach has ultimate power. I mean, he instills fear in guys. They can pull scholarships. They can hide you on the bench. They can do all kinds of things. And guys are, they have no means. I mean, now there's social media, so I guess you have a little bit of a voice. But when I was playing, you had no means of recourse. You just had to go along to get along. Now, when you bring that attitude into the NFL, it just doesn't work out. The thing about an NFL coach is you're putting out fires constantly. You're dealing with individuals. You're dealing with emotions. You're dealing with, you know, people getting along. You're dealing with, you know, frustrations from this star player and that star player. And I think what we see a lot of times is you can be a great position coach. You can be an excellent coordinator when you're just dealing with the X's and O's. But when you get moved to that head coach level and you have to deal with somebody coming in late or somebody who's, you know, frustrated about this or that, or position coaches and players not getting along, it's exhausting, you know. And you're right. Like, some of these guys are making, you know, their game checks are almost what his salary is going to be. There's just not that ability to have that complete autonomy and instill fear in these guys. Guys aren't scared of a head coach, you know. Like, we get frustrated, you know, and we might be, you know, we might say some things here and there, but nobody fears a head coach. When you get to the NFL level, you have to work with guys. You know, you have to be able to gain their respect. That's how you get guys to play for you. That's how you get guys to run through the wall for you. You know, you put yourself out there, you show that you have the knowledge and the capability of putting together a game plan that's going to be effective and is going to help us win. And then you show respect to the players. You can hold them accountable. You know, I'm not saying that you have to bend over. You can definitely hold them accountable, but you got to hold everybody accountable, including yourself. And if players see that and they believe in it, then they'll buy in. If not, if you're just up there screaming, or you're just up there trying to punish people, you're trying to make examples of people, that's not going to work in the NFL level.
All right. And so let's tie it into what's going on here in our own backyard with Joe Judge, right? Like, you know, this is his second year. It's been documented. We know his coaching style. Now, listen, I'm not saying that it's the same coaching style as Urban Meyer and Nick Saban. No, but it's pretty unique in that it's the coaching style that I feel okay if you're winning, okay if you have a track history of somebody like Bill Belichick. But I just my concern is that his coaching style is going to get old if the Giants continue to lose. Agree or disagree?
No, I agree. It's all about wins. at this level, you have to win games. That's what we get paid to do. That's what we're all here for. Everybody is on the hot seat on a regular basis, whether you like to know it or not. You know, there's maybe a couple guys around the league who can say, oh, their spots are safe, coaching and players. But for the rest of the guys in the league, the majority of the people on that roster, the majority of those coaches, it's not a pretty situation. You got to produce week in and week out. And if you're not, you're going to be let go. We've seen a number of coaches come out of that Belichick coaching tree and get opportunities and end up back at a coordinator level. It happens. But if Joe Judge can somehow get these guys to buy in and get them to understand what it is he's trying to preach and get them to get wins and get off the field victorious, then we're having a whole different conversation. Then we're saying, okay, you know, it took him some time to turn it around. It took him, you know, some time for them to buy in and to understand what it was that he was trying to instill in them. That's what the key is. Are they going to be able to buy in? I believe his philosophy is solid. I believe his philosophy can work. Are they going to buy in? Are they going to have the pieces to put together to get off that field with a win? That's all that matters at this point. Just win the game. Ugly, bad, doesn't matter. Win the game. Let's go play another game and let's line up.
Now back to New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us on the show. Mike, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're great. We're great. Before we start diving into this Jets-Patriots matchup, I just want to let the folks know. So tell us, what are you going to be doing for the Steelers-Raiders game?
Yeah, we have the national radio broadcast on ESPN. So my partner, Mark Kestisher, and I will have an exciting game between two undefeated teams and the Raiders and the Steelers.
So congratulations. That'll be great. I like the under in this game. You know, the Steelers defense is just ridiculous. And also really didn't see a lot from Ben Roethlisberger. I think they're going to run the ball with Najee Harris. Am I on the right side there, Mike?
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of interesting matchups in this game. You know, I thought the Raider pass rush was really good. You know, Max Crosby, Yannick Ngakoue both played really well. Carl Nassib was able to contribute as well. And, you know, the Steelers have three new offensive linemen from last year. So I think they're still trying to sort that out. Ben Roethlisberger continues to get rid of the ball really quick. So, yeah, it could be a low-scoring game. You know, on the other side, obviously it's going to be the home opener for the Steelers with that great pass rush. They didn't pressure much last week. They were able to get home with four pass rushers. And, you know, the Raiders, too, have a new offensive line. So with no Josh Jacobs, it's going to be interesting to see how John Gruden wants to attack the Steeler defense.
It's going to be a good one. All right, another home opener right here in our own backyard as the Zach Mack era begins. So let's start with the let's start with the Jets first and foremost, right? Like, out of curiosity, what did you like? What did you not like in regard to what you saw from Zach Wilson in Week One, Mike?
You know, I thought he played better as the game went on, guys. And you know, mental toughness is a big part of being a starting NFL quarterback. And obviously, they got off to a slow start, but he played well in the second half. And I think what we're going to, moving forward, guys, to this week, I think what Coach Belichick's going to try to do is keep him in the pocket because he has great movement skills. I think he has really good accuracy, especially outside the pocket. And one of the things that, you know, Coach Belichick is known for is he tries to take away what you do well.
Now, you talked about Belichick taking away what they do well. How do you think that their run game or lack thereof is going to affect them?
Yeah, you know, as you know, Kiwi, as a former defensive player, you know, anytime you're one-dimensional for that front seven and they can just tee off on the, you know, pass rush, it just makes it that much better. And that's where I think, you know, you need some semblance of balance or at least enough to try to keep the pass rush, you know, somewhat honest. So I do think for Jets not having a running game puts that much more pressure, you know, on a rookie quarterback.
What weapons do you think Zach is going to be working with today? Like, I think it's huge that Jameson Crowder is going to be active. You know, I like to call slot receivers mud bugs. You know, he's veteran savvy, able to find that open space. The connection with Corey Davis we saw in Week One doesn't have a lot of tight ends to work with, that's for sure. And you know that offensive line is really suspect. It was suspect even before Becton went down. So, how do you see Wilson countering what the Patriots are going to do today?
Yeah, no, I agree there. And you know, I think Corey Davis, Jameson Crowder, Look, you know, when you look at New England, you know, they don't have Stephon Gilmore for at least the first 6 weeks of the season. He's obviously a great difference-making corner. So I think they're going to try to get rid of the ball quick. You know, Crowder hopefully is 100% for the Jets. That would be a really good place to start. And then, you know, Corey Davis has shown that he can win one-on-one outside. So, but when you lose a guy like Mekhi Becton, it really impacts your offense because you have to be mindful it's protection first. And either you have to slide there, you have to chip, you have to keep it back in. It just, you can't get as many players out in the routes just from a standpoint if you got a double team. So, you know, Becton was one of those guys where not only did he do his job, but he was a force multiplier because you can double team other spots in line, which you won't be able to do. And George Fant is going to have to play more consistent. Morgan Moses is going to have to play well. So I think that's going to be one of the real big keys to the game.
Historically, the Jets just haven't done well about, you know, against the Patriots. Like in the front office, how much weight do you put on that? How much weight do you put on the history of the series when you're going into a game, or does it not matter?
Yeah, of course. You know, it's a division rival, and you know, when I was at the Jets or the Dolphins, you know, like for so many years, Patriots were the standard, and of course, you always try to think how can we beat them. But you know, look, they're different, right? They have a rookie quarterback too, and I think. Ultimately, guys, I think today's game is going to come down to which rookie quarterback makes less mistakes. And one thing that Mac Jones has done in college, he did in preseason, and he did last week, but for one throw, he hasn't made a lot of mistakes. So I think one of the things I would be emphasizing if I was the Jets with Zach Wilson is, hey, every drive ends in a kick. If every drive ends in a kick, we should be there in the fourth quarter, and then let's go make a play to win the game. So it's a different Patriot team, but no doubt about it, it's still a big, big rivalry.
Again, Mike Tannenbaum joining us here on 98.7 ESPN New York Game Day. Taking a look at on the opposite side, of course, offensively with Mac Jones, you know, top 10 offensive line. You go back, you look at the tape from week one. Granted, they lost. I believe they lost because of the fumble with Damian Harris. But nonetheless, Mac Jones just carved them up. Accuracy, pinpoint, you know, no bells and whistles, very dink and dunk. We had Rich Cimini on not too long ago, you know, explaining that the Jets defense, they play a lot of zone defense, and therefore it's going to play exactly into the offense that the Patriots have Mac Jones playing in. So expecting a lot of success from Mac Jones today, Mike?
I think it all starts with the run game. You know, there was a couple of times where, you know, what's so hard about the Patriots offense is their play action game actually is at its best when the quarterback turns his back to the line of scrimmage. Their pad level's so good. It really puts the linebackers in that run-pass conflict because they do such a great job of tying the run and pass game together. So if the Patriots get any sort of success in the run game, that makes Mac Jones so much better. And that's really where you could start getting some spacing in their zone. So I think the key for the Jets is you want to make the Patriots one-dimensional and, you know, force Mac Jones to get the ball down the field. And this is only his second start. And I try to speed up his clock, give him different looks as well. And you'll see which rookie quarterback will make more mistakes.
Before we let you go, I know we spent a lot of time talking about the Jets, but you know, I need to ask you about the Giants and you know, just kind of recapping that loss, how unfortunate it was to come down to a field goal and getting a second opportunity in the field goal because a penalty on the Giants. You know, this is a Giants team now for what, the fifth, sixth straight year. They start 0-2, Mike. What are your thoughts post that loss for the Giants?
You know, Coach Parcells used to have a great expression, guys. He always talked about the great coaches were the ones that could really assess why they lost the game. And to me, there was 3:21 left in the second quarter. Giants were up 7-0, called the timeout, came out of that timeout, rushed to the line of scrimmage, had an illegal procedure, knocked themselves out of field goal range. And that was a three-point mistake. And those, to me, are the things that have to get cleaned up if on the Giants, because they could have won that game in the second quarter. That was a huge play in the game. So I know everyone's going to talk about Dexter Lawrence, and obviously those are mistakes you have to clean up, guys. But there's a lot of other little things. With that said, Daniel Jones played really well. And obviously there was a huge play that was nullified by a penalty. But I like the way he's playing. He still has 40 turnovers in 29 games. But he, to me, took a step the other night, and that's a good Washington defense, as we know. So long way to go, even though they're 0-2.
I agree with you that Daniel Jones looked, you know, he looked looked pretty good. Like, in your opinion, like, who takes responsibility for this loss? Is this coaching? Is this on the players? Like, where does the responsibility lie for this loss, in your opinion?
I think it's just like Kiwi, if it was a win, you know, it's everybody. You know, you got to own it. You got to get better. Look, it's really hard to block kicks. Dexter Lawrence trying to make a play. First thing you got to do is stay onside, right? Anything less than fourth and five or a game ending situation, you got to watch the ball. But like I said, in my opinion, it came down to a lot more than just one play.
Again, he is Mike Tannenbaum, and he'll be on the call for the Steelers and Raiders game this afternoon. So great job, Mike. Thank you so much for joining us. Really do appreciate it.
Yeah, look forward to joining you guys next week. Have a enjoy the game today.
Now back to New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks.